Welcome to Inspirational Tales. When my guests on this podcast experience the most challenging times of their lives, they use these hardships to learn, grow, and better themselves. And as a result, they are now thriving in life. Their stories are ones of resilience, strength, and overcoming adversity. So sit back and join me as we celebrate them turning their challenges into triumphs. My guest on this episode is Katrina Holt. Katrina was diagnosed with alopecia when she was 9 years old. Since then, she has experienced varying degrees of the condition, including having her hair grow back and fall out multiple times. In this interview, Katrina discusses how alopecia has affected many aspects of her life, including the emotional struggles she has faced and how at 37 years old, she decided to take back her power and shave her head. She speaks about her response to both of her children also being diagnosed with alopecia and how she is teaching them that hair and external looks are not important and that it is what is inside that counts. Katrina is a proud advocate for her family as well as others living with alopecia. I'm so happy that she has learnt to love herself again and in turn is able to inspire so many people to feel the same about themselves. Hi Kat, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So today we're going to talk about your life and your journey living with alopecia. So can you start off by telling us, and for anyone listening that doesn't know what alopecia actually is, what is it?
Yeah, so alopecia is a autoimmune condition that basically causes you to lose hair either from like a single part of your body, or you can actually lose it from multiple places on your body or your entire body. So basically what happens is your immune system and your body attacks the hair follicles, which causes them to fall out and then often not regrow. It's kind of like they see them as like this bad thing that they need to get rid of. There is no known reason why it happens. There's no one that can say it's because of stress or it's because of some sort of medical issue. I think if they knew why it happened, they would be able to find a cure. So there is no cure. There are treatments that you can try, but again, they don't have a great success rate and they're often invasive and have lots of side effects. So I currently have alopecia areata. There are multiple forms. So alopecia areata is where you can have patches of hair loss and thinness. And then there's alopecia totalis, which is where you lose your entire head. And then universalis is where you lose your entire body. That one is the rarest form of alopecia. I've actually had almost all three.
Oh, so you can go from one form to another.
Yeah. So people that tend to get universalis will tend to only get universalis. But for me, I have gone between areata and totalis, I think, 5 times now. Mm. And once or twice I lost my eyebrows and eyelashes, some arm hair. So I kind of went halfway between totalis and universalis. Yeah, so it's not contagious. And generally people that have alopecia are healthy. They aren't generally sick or have lots of other autoimmune conditions. There can be a couple linked to it, but generally you're a happy, healthy person that suddenly alopecia triggers in your body and it happens.
So you're happy, healthy, and you lose your hair.
Yeah, and it can be rapid. It can be really fast, which is very scary to go from having a full head of hair to having no hair on your head sometimes within a matter of 8 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So when did it first start for you?
So I was 9 years old and my mum was doing my hair before school and she noticed what we would say is like a 20-cent coin-sized patch on my head. She hadn't noticed the patch before. It was like it was just suddenly there. I guess she probably didn't know what it was at that stage. So she took me to our GP, our local doctor, and he said that it was likely that it was alopecia. And he referred us on to a dermatologist. So by the time I got in to see the dermatologist, I had a number of patches by that time because it was a couple of weeks later. And basically, he said, there's no cure. We don't know what causes it. And there's these treatments that we can try, but you may lose all of your hair You may get patches. You may have it for life. They had no idea. It's very unknown. So, yeah, it's pretty full on. There's no family history in my family. There's no, you know, we went back on my mum's side and my dad's side, and there's no one we know of that has had alopecia in the past. But again, they don't understand the genetics behind it either, which is interesting. There is research happening, but I think, unfortunately, because it's not seen as a life-threatening illness, there's not as much research happening as there is for other illnesses. Often treatments come as a result of other trials. So like currently there's a treatment that only came out, I think last week, that America, the FDA approved, and everyone's been sending me message after message saying, are you going to try this treatment? What do you think about this treatment? And that was as a result of, I think, an arthritis trial. So it was like a byproduct. But again, the treatment has some pretty full-on side effects, and it's basically shocking your immune system into stopping doing what it's doing. And there's generally like a 50 to 60% chance that your hair will regrow. So it's not a cure. It's an option that your hair may grow, but you also will likely get nausea, diarrhea, skin rashes. There's other complications as well, and you might end up with hair. So like when I was a child, obviously my mum, I guess you can say, freaked out. So we tried treatments. We tried an ointment, a steroid ointment that you put on your head. We tried light therapy. So you go and you sit under these UV or radiation style lights for hours on end. We tried functional medicine. So we tried diets and supplements. We even tried cortisone injections into the scalp.
Oh, they were horrible. That sounds interesting.
They were horrible, painful. We didn't try them for long because I just couldn't cope with them. And they, again, it's steroids. So, again, there's possible side effects, you know, puffiness and skin irritations and that sort of stuff. So you can kind of say we tried everything. That was a round to try at that time. I felt like a pincushion. I felt like probably 6 months after the first patch, I felt like all I saw was doctors. We were going to this doctor, that doctor, dermatologist, naturopath, a dietitian. It just felt like it was doctor after doctor. And then we kind of gave up because nothing changed. Nothing made it grow. Nothing made it stay. There wasn't anything different. We were just spending a lot of time and money that wasn't changing anything.
And making you unwell at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, and missing out on school and, you know, missing out on being a kid and playing because, you know, I was often unwell or seeing a doctor or travelling a long way to see a doctor. So it was a pretty full-on thing. I think the benefit of me being 9 is you are naive when you're a child, and some of it I actually don't fully remember. Some of it I think I've blocked out even. I think there's a lot of stuff I've blocked out through the years. But as a young child, when you get it, you become alopecia and you kind of adapt to it and it's just part of who you are. And you don't necessarily understand when people look at you. You don't straight away go, oh, they're staring at my head. It's just like, oh, they're looking at me. Like when you're a young child, it's often harder on the parents than it is on the child because we just go about our business. We haven't at that stage yet grown up to understand that hair is apparently important. So we just carry on. So, yeah, so I was one of those people that from when my mum found my first patch, I went to having not a single hair on my head within 2 months, within 8 weeks. So I was completely bald. And I had beautiful, I'm going to sometimes get emotional when I'm talking, just pre-warning it. I had beautiful strawberry blonde, long, really healthy hair that was past my shoulders. And there was no sign that this was going to happen to me. And then, yeah, it was gone. It was just not there anymore. It was really hard on my mum at that age because she blamed herself, which she only recently told me all of this with my children being diagnosed. I've been able to sympathise with her, what she went through as a mother of a child that has it. You know, she would tell me she would, every night she would be crying in the shower, or if, you know, something happened at a shopping centre or something, you know, she would be secretly hiding her tears. Because I think when you're a child, a lot of it falls down to your parents having to deal with it.
Yeah.
And they want the best for their child. They want their child to essentially be normal and fit in. And that wasn't an option for me.
So what were your school years like after this happened?
When we first found that patch and the first dermatologist appointment, after that appointment, I was a little confident, outgoing child, very carefree. So I went to my class and I decided I wanted to tell them what was happening to me. So there was a glimpse of me owning it way back then when I was 9 years old. So I told the class what was happening, well, that I had alopecia, that I might lose all of my hair, I might just have patches, and thank God I did, because it did all go. And I think when I talked it through with my parents, we felt that if people know what it is, they're less likely to make assumptions. They're less likely to talk about, you know, she has cancer, she's sick, or just other rumours, what's going on, has she shaved patches on her head, or because kids can come up with some very inventive things that are happening. So telling them for me took that aspect away, because if they know what's actually really happening, then they can't make things up and they can't make assumptions and there can't be rumours and gossip. So I did that and it did help a lot for me. The other thing, my nan crocheted these adorable, really cute little caps that I used to wear. So she did them in school colours. She did them in so many different colours. And so I used to cover it up all the time, which is something that often people will do. So I'd wear the little crocheted hats. I'd wear baseball caps. I'd wear bandanas. But as I said, I think at that age, for me at that point, it wasn't a huge part of my life, or it wasn't a huge issue. And in my school, I didn't have too much problems. It would be when we would go to a excursion where there were other schools where I'd have problems. You know, I would have kids, you know, point, whisper, call me Baldy behind your back, like as they walk past. It was more those people that didn't know and didn't understand that used to make those comments. There was a TV commercial that came out around the time that I lost all my hair, and it was for shampoo, and she used to wash her hair and then she shaved her head, and it sort of transitioned to, I'd rather be bald than have dandruff.
Oh, no, I don't remember.
Yeah, that's
that.
What she said. That that's is what she said in the TV commercial. I would rather be bald than have dandruff. Do you know how many people used to say that to me? Because came out at that time. They'd be like, oh, do you have dandruff? You'd rather be bald, or, you know, they would literally say that verse, and I would be like, oh, my gosh. I'd either run away and hide and cry, or I would ignore them. It just depending on how much I had to deal with that day would depend on how much emotional strength I had to deal with it at that time. Yeah, it was just, you can never go anywhere and not be stared at. And not see in someone's eyes what they're thinking. And it happened to me when I was 9, and it still happens to me now. There's never a moment where I don't leave the house and have someone stare or have a child say something, because children don't know. And it's an opportunity to educate them. It's just like the elephant in the room is you. All the time, everywhere you go. But, yeah, so as a young child, not so complicated. Kids like to pick on kids if they're different. I don't feel like I was, I want to say, bullied in school. And I don't know if part of that was me owning it from the start in regards to getting up and explaining what was happening and being honest. I even went for school prefect in year 6 and my speech started with, I'm the shortest, because I'm very short. I'm the shortest, baldest, and cutest kid in year six, and that's why you should vote for me.
I love it.
So there was parts where I owned it back then, and then there's the other parts where you hide. I guess it's just coping mechanisms. If you don't move on and you don't keep going, what's the other option? Yeah. It's not a very nice option. So, yeah, and then for high school was a little bit different again. So when I started high school, I had a little bit of regrowth, maybe 1 or 2 inches. And so I didn't do anything at high school like I did at primary school. I didn't tell everyone what was happening. I didn't explain anything. And, like, the year 12 kids used to ping pong the younger kids across the corridor. So they'd lie on each side of the corridor and you'd walk through and they'd push you from side to side. And I would walk through and they would all stop and they would be like, oh, you can go through. And they would pat me on the head as I walked past. They all thought I had cancer. So they would all just, you know, be super nice and I wouldn't get ping ponged. And I was like, you know what, I'll take it. If you want to assume, I'm going to take it. And it means that I don't get ping ponged across the corridor. But I did lose it again in high school, not completely. I got patches and then it obviously then restarted to regrow again while I was at high school. I think I was around year 9 or 10 when it started to regrow. And I can definitely say when I had less hair, I had less friends. And when I had more hair, I had more friends. Like, because it's hard on everyone around you as well as you, because people don't know how to treat you. You know, my girlfriends would have a sleepover or have a party and they wouldn't invite me because they would want to braid one another's hair or they would want to be doing their hair, and they always felt that I would get too offended or too upset because I couldn't do mine. When at the end of the day, all I wanted to do was just be there. Like, and, you know, it would have been tough watching them do their hair, but I would have been included, and that would have made me feel valued instead of not including me all the time. That was tough in high school, getting used to that whole, that's when that society of how you look starts to matter.
Yeah.
And the even funnier is boys. As soon as I had hair, I would have interest. As soon as I didn't have hair, no one was interested.
Yeah.
So it set me up for this, I'm not valuable, I'm not wanted, I'm not needed, I'm not worthy if I don't have hair.
Yeah.
I'm not attractive if I'm not feminine. I'm not any of that if I don't have hair. And that was, that started because of the way people around me were reacting, and they were reacting in that way. As soon as my hair grew, I started getting invited to things and I started having boys message me, like more so in year 11 and 12 than the younger years. But it was almost like I never existed before and suddenly I existed. It's quite interesting the way that people do put value on looks and put value on what looks normal and what doesn't look normal.
And to see that firsthand in both instances as well, I think is a unique position that you've been in, where you saw it before and then you saw it as your hair grew back and then your hair then fell out again. I can't imagine the roller coaster that this must be of trying to deal with this, thinking that, okay, it's gone now, I'll start to learn to cope with that. It's grown back. Okay, it's grown back. How do I deal with that? And then it falls out again. How do you deal with that up and down of not knowing what's going to happen and trying to deal with things as they come?
Oh, you don't.
Yeah.
It makes it so hard because one of the worst parts of alopecia is your loss of your identity and your loss of your control. You have no control over what is happening to you. You have no power over what is happening to you. You have no choice. And so, as you said, when it would grow, I would get used to it again and I would feel comfortable again and I would be like, yep, we're all good now. And then it would fall out again. And going through that every time, because often when it would fall out again, I would be in a different stage of life.
Yeah.
Say, for instance, my now husband, he was my boyfriend. When he met me, I had hair. I had shoulder length hair, actually. It was there for a long period that time. And we were together, I think, two and a half years, and we'd bought our first house together, and my hair started falling out. And I had no idea how he was going to react. He had not been through this with me. He had not seen what impact it has on you emotionally and mentally. He had not been around to see how others treat you and what they say.
Yeah.
So I had no idea what he was going to do. So it's like every time it falls out, it's like starting all over again. And you have to talk to everyone around you again and explain what's going on. I was in a job. I'd been there for 3 years at a hospital working in administration, and none of them knew I had alopecia. And then so it's that decision when it starts falling out, do I hide it? Do I hide it long enough where I then get a wig? Or do I cover it up as much as I can until I can't anymore? Or do I just straight out come out and say, listen, guys, I have alopecia. I'm starting to lose my hair again. I don't know what it's going to do. But it's like that decision happens every couple of years for me, and I have to go through. It's kind of like exposing yourself. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but everyone around you gets used to you the way you are, and then you change. And it's like you have to present yourself to everyone. Oh, here I am. This is actually me, just a bit different. And that is hard. That is really hard. And then I feel guilty sometimes because my hair grows. And there are some people where once it falls out, it does not come back. And that's just it for them. So I feel guilty that my hair actually grows. But then they often say that they're so used to themselves the way they are, they wouldn't be able to cope if their hair grew.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know if it's going to stay. I mean, it's like flipping a coin. You just have no idea. You can have it growing on one patch of your head and falling out on the other side at the same time. So it's just so unknown. Yeah. So the roller coaster is never ending. It's just like you're trapped on this ride that you can't get off. One of the things I have said before is it's like being in the passenger seat of a car. And you're strapped in and you can't get out of that passenger seat, and someone puts a brick on the pedal and lets the car go, and you can't stop the car. You can't put the brake on. You can't move. You can't adjust the steering wheel, and you know that you're about to crash, but you can't do anything about it. That's what it feels like when it starts falling out again. You know what you're about to go through again, and it's hard. Mentally, I think my coping mechanism was acting. I just acted like I was perfectly fine. I would put this mask on that I'm okay, everything's good. I didn't want anyone around me to worry about me. So I just pretended I was okay on the outside world. But inside, I couldn't look at a mirror. I felt completely unattractive. I would be checking my head probably a minimum of 20 times a day, looking for patches, looking for hair thinning. I'm looking at the brush to see how much is coming out in the brush. I'm looking at shower drain to see how much is coming out when I wash it. I'm looking at my pillow to see how much hair is on my pillow. It's just, it consumes me when it starts falling out in a way that is just unfair and I have no control over. It can be very, very dangerous mentally, alopecia. The effects it can have on a person. I know people that won't leave their house. They completely hide and they will not leave their house and no one knows, and they can't bear the thought of people judging them because of what they have. I know other people who have worn wigs their entire life and no one knows. And then I know people like me who get to a point where you're like, oh, I can't do this anymore. I can't be consumed by this. I need control. and they go out just the way they are, and they just deal with the daily issues that we deal with. So it's just so complex, and there's no right or wrong way to deal with alopecia, and everyone has to deal with it their own way, just as long as they deal with it, because there can be really bad consequences if you don't. I guess I maybe have a bit of, I don't know, luck, a bit of extra support, a bit of something extra that meant that I was able to get on with life. So I'm lucky in that way, because that doesn't happen for everyone.
So when you were 37 and your hair fell out at that stage, can you talk us through what happened then and what you decided to do to try and take control of your own life?
Yep. As I said, it was consuming me. So it started to fall out again, and I got sick of looking at it, sick of looking for patches. I didn't want to not look in the mirror anymore. Because it consumes you so much, it started causing issues in my relationship, because I become insecure. I become withdrawn. I become, I want to say, emotionally unstable, because I feel horrible about myself. And it started causing some serious issues, both in my relationship, even with my work, with my children. I was focusing so much on my hair loss and what was happening to me and how it was making me feel, that I wasn't able to enjoy anything else around me. You know, those little moments of your children taking their first steps, I would get excited for a moment, and then I'd just get pulled back into that almost depressive state of, oh, my hair's falling out again. You know, I'm now going to have to deal with this. How are my children going to deal with this? You know, how are they going to go to school and say, my mummy has no hair? And everyone at school will be like, what do you mean? Like, there's those moments where you go, I can't do this. I need to do something to change. I need to be living my life for me and not living my life through alopecia. So I decided to shave, which is something I have never decided. So 30 years of alopecia, and I had never previously shaved my head. It was empowering. It was relief. I did not cry. I didn't shed a tear when we shaved my head. My best friend did
it. It was the right decision.
100%. It was the right decision. And there was an instant recognition of my reflection. It was this feeling of, I looked at myself and that was me. It was almost like, with hair, it's not me. And I felt so much better, because I wasn't looking for hair loss. It wasn't there. So I had no choice. So I started enjoying my life again. Now I started working on my relationship to repair the damage had been done, because of my self-esteem and my trust and me feeling so unattractive. You know, that does have an effect on intimacy in marriage. You know, if you feel you're not worthy, you're not attractive, no one would want you, that has implications. So deciding to shave was honestly such a pivotal moment in my life. And to be honest, I think I could actually shave my head for the rest of my life and be happy and be comfortable and not have a worry in the world in regards to, oh, is it going to grow again? Is it going to fall out again? If it grows again, is it going to fall out again? I would right now be happy to shave. And if you offered me, like, say, for instance, that treatment or a cure, I probably would turn you down.
Wow.
Because it's part of me. It's part of my journey. It's part of my path. It's part of who I am. So as I said, it takes away your identity, but it's now given me back my identity by me choosing to shave, by me choosing to be in control. I now have the power over my hair, and it doesn't have the power over me anymore. If it starts to get power over me, like when it starts to grow a little bit and I can see a patch or I see thinness, I'll shave it straight away. because I'm not going to lose that power. I'm going to keep that power. I see a completely different person when I look in the mirror now than what I saw when I'm losing my hair. And it's a happy person. It's a confident person. It's a loving person. There's power in acceptance itself and being able to love your reflection, as well as the power in control by me making that decision. And I will stand by that forever, and I will encourage anyone to shave, because it just takes away the whole block around what is my hair doing, because I'm telling my hair what it's doing. It's not telling me.
Wow. I'm getting teary. Yeah.
It's so powerful
what you've done, like from what you've been through to decide to take control and to do that for yourself, and now to love yourself again because you've taken control and because you've realized that you're not defined by whether you've got hair or not.
Yep. Completely not defined. No one is defined by their hair or the way they look. We need to define ourselves by how we feel and what we want to be, not by what's on the outside. Like, my identity now is from within. My identity is not what's happening on the outside of me. My identity is really deep within me, and it's a mum, a wife, a daughter, a person with alopecia. And I wouldn't change that, not for the world, because of what it's turned me into. And I'm so happy with what it's turned me into. I consider myself lucky. I have empathy in a way that a lot of people don't have. You'll often find people that have something different. I instantly warm to them, and they feel safe and secure with me, and that they can tell me anything, and that they're not being judged or looked at differently. And the ability to have people that you don't know instantly trust you and instantly warm to you, it's incredible.
When did you decide to start putting yourself out there and create your social media accounts to start speaking out about all of this?
Well, part of it was the shaving, and shaving my head made me realize, you know what, if I can take back my power at the age of 37, I'm pretty sure others can too. So I had this want to help others, and this want to spread awareness. And it couldn't have been any more timely, because my daughter then developed alopecia. So I think part of it was that shaving and that wanting to help others. But then once my daughter got alopecia, it became even more of a reason for me to say, you can be different and it's okay. Hair does not matter. It's not important. And I'm going to show the world that it doesn't matter and it's not important. And I'm going to show the world, because I'm going to show my children that what they look like is not important. And I think I've also been empowered by sharing the messages that I get from other people with alopecia, saying that they are so happy that they found my page and that I'm an inspiration to them. And I even get, like I said, women coming to me and saying, I shaved my head because of you. That is so empowering, and that is so, I'm inspired by them after they've been inspired by me. I did, I think, once or twice go, am I doing the right thing putting myself out there? Because I'm slightly taking away the choice of my children to be hidden, but there's no way I want them to hide. So it 100% has been the right thing for me. And to empower other people is empowering me, and it's kind of like feeding itself. Like, I'm being fed by all these amazing people that are taking back their control and that are loving themselves again. And it just makes me want to do more, and it makes me want to get out there more. I mean, the Oscars situation. That obviously was an interesting situation, and lots of people had different opinions on that. And I had people coming to me for my opinion on that. But at the end of the day, it created more awareness. I mean, there were so many people that had no idea what alopecia was until that moment. I wish maybe it had have happened just a little bit less intense than what it was.
Yeah.
But then again, would it have had the impact in regards to people learning about alopecia?
Well, it probably wouldn't have made all the news and all of that if if it was civil and off camera.
Yeah. So it gave opportunity to spread awareness further. On the flip side, it gave opportunity for people to call people with alopecia G.I. Jane. Mm. So there's always a double-edged sword, isn't there? It's, you know, if it's publicity about something, it also adds, it gives people another way of attacking other people.
Yeah.
There, it happened again recently with the politicians. You know, one of the politicians was referred to as Voldemort out of Harry Potter. Not long after, one of my children gets called Voldemort. So It's creating awareness because we're talking about alopecia, but it's also creating issues in regards to bringing to the light what actually affects us and what bothers us. And there's some not nice people out there that will always use that. But, yeah.
In terms of social media, with all of this, obviously you're using it for a positive aspect. And like you're saying, with the media, sometimes it's not always positive. But in terms of the world that we live in now compared to the world that you and me grew up in without having social media, how is that affecting, say, for instance, your children or people growing up compared to what you dealt with when you grew up? How much harder is it now? Because I think that the aesthetic of what we, in air quotes, should look like is being not always even natural.
Yep.
How is, I'm not sure what the question is here, but I think you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So, for instance, we didn't have Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram. You know, if you saw images or read things, it was in magazines or newspapers. And so if someone wanted to say something, they would have to actually say it to you, and they couldn't hide behind a screen or behind a keyboard. I think people these days, they fire off negative comments or their opinion really fast because they're behind that screen and keyboard, and it takes away the emotion of, well, how do you think that's actually going to be perceived, or how do you think that person's going to feel when they read that? And this happened with my daughter. So kids have Snapchat. There's this anonymous thing they can do where they send a snap or a picture, but it goes across as anonymous. I mean, I don't even understand it fully.
I'm too old. But
it goes, yeah, it goes anonymous, and they can put up pictures of people, and they might say, rate them, and they'll have, you know, A is smart, B is pretty, D is ugly, C is dumb, and people vote, sort of thing. Well, someone put up one of her. And it said that she looks like a teacher at school that is bald. So it said, do you think Izzy looks like Mr. and then what his name was? And it got spread out. And she came to me in tears and said, I don't like this. And this was her first sort of, because she started at high school this year, this was her first sort of exposure to that social media impact that you can have when you have something that is different and people are going to call you out. So she was bawling her eyes out. She was crying. And then one of her friends reshared it, and she thought she was helping. So she reshared it and scribbled out everything that was written on there and said, leave her alone. But in a lot of ways, that added more fuel because you're resharing it. We understood her reasoning behind it, but it didn't help the situation. So it's very complicated in regards to that. I know that she's had moments where she feels like she's pretty sure people have taken photos of her from behind. with her patches. So you just don't know what's being shared around and what's being said. Whereas when we were young, the only way to do that was to actually talk to someone.
Or lug around a big camera.
You don't know what's out there and what's being said. And then once it's out there, it can't be deleted or reversed or undone. Now, she handled it quite well, and she spoke to her friend and said, this is the way it made me feel. But still, it's just those aspects of, you know, they all have their phones. Generally, they have their phones in school and everything shared. And as you said, it's just there's so much, all these influences and celebrities and people that are out there. And it's so much about aesthetics and how they look. And it's constantly put in front of your face. I mean, I see it all the time on my social medias, you know, ads for particular celebrities or people resharing their things. And I don't know if you remember, a little while ago there was some bald pranks that went around where people were buying bald caps and putting them on and fixing them up with makeup so it looked like they'd shaved their head. And then they were going to their family members or their friends or their social media and exposing themselves as this bold person and seeing people's reactions. Like, there was one person that has millions of followers that did this, and the reactions from their friends were horrible. And I can only imagine some of the younger followers of this person that have alopecia seeing the way their friends are reacting, going, I've got alopecia, I'm losing my hair, or I have no hair. Is that what everyone thinks about me? Like, why do that? Or, you know, their parents completely losing the plot because they think they've shaved their head. And that's the emphasis that gets put on hair.
Yeah.
You know, you have a bad haircut, someone will go and put up a story about it. And I think this is where I'm different with growing up with alopecia and being different. I don't understand how you can attack someone on the way they look because it's not warranted and it's not fair, and there's no reason. There is no valid reason to attack someone about the way they look. Those politicians I spoke about, attack one another on your policies, but do not attack one another on the way you look, because that's demonstrating to children out there that that's okay. That's okay. You can say something bad about someone and you can pick on them about the way they look. That's all right. And it makes it look as though it's okay. It's okay to pick on someone because their nose is bigger than everyone else's. It's okay to point out someone's mole. It's okay to attack someone because they have no hair. But it's never okay. Like, and it shouldn't be accepted that it's okay because it's what we do. Well, it doesn't have to be what we do. Like, if someone is legitimately doing the wrong thing, don't attack them about how they look, you know, attack them about what they're actually doing that's wrong. I thought it was hilarious during lockdown when everyone lost the plot because they couldn't get their grades covered. And I was like, are you kidding me? This is like a centimetre's glimpse of what it feels like to have alopecia. You're all losing the plot because hairdressers are closed and you can't get your greys covered up. I don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Alopecians don't have a choice. They have to just go out the way they are. And here you are all running around like crazy because, oh, my God, I can't get my greys covered up, and you're wearing hats and you're wearing headbands. I'm like, that's slightly what it feels like, but worse.
Yeah. I think COVID did, though, one thing it did do, obviously it wasn't a good thing on any account, but in terms of mental health things, it brought a lot to the light. I think it brought a lot of these sort of issues up because people were dealing with things that they never had to deal with before.
Yes.
And so I think it did bring some things to the light, like you're saying, a little bit for alopecia, for different sorts of things that other people deal with as well. I think people had to sort of think a bit differently for a little bit and maybe think about what other people were dealing with a bit more.
Yeah, there was those slight moments of realization of, oh, this is what you go through. Like, you don't have that choice. I even raised it in a we were in a meeting with someone, but one of the ladies in the meeting was carrying on, I would say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't go to a hairdresser. My hair's going grey. I'm wearing see my headbands. And I was like, hello? Excuse me? And they're all like, yeah. And I'm like, do you kind of understand what it's like for me now? Like, you're really upset because you can't cover up your greys. My hair falls out and it doesn't grow. And I have no choice in that matter. And they all just went silent. Like, they just.
Yeah, the realization.
This moment of, oh, wow. And I'm like, imagine if the hairdressers never opened again and you could never go to another hairdresser. They're like, no.
Yeah.
See, just that little bit of realization and that little bit of understanding, and you kind of go, oh, that would be horrible, and that is horrible.
So when your children were, you've got two children and they're both diagnosed with alopecia. When they were diagnosed, can you speak a bit about that, about how that happened and how you and them coped with that?
Yep. So one of my fears my entire life has been my children getting alopecia. Not only checking my own hair constantly when it grows, I was actually actively checking their hair from the day they're born, looking for patches, looking for thinness, because it was a very, very large fear of mine. Could I pass this on to my children? So when my daughter was, she was 9, maybe 10, I was doing her hair because she's a gymnast. So we were going for this really cool photo shoot to do some gymnastics poses and photos. And I was in the middle of straightening it and I parted it. And lo and behold, there's a bald patch. In that moment, my heart broke, completely broke. I had a whole flashback of my life and of what it means for her, and had this moment of realization of what she's going to have to go through and deal with. And it was like that fear of mine, it came true in that split second. I didn't handle it very well. She, I think, knew instantly what had happened, because I honestly fell to the floor in an absolute heap and was really upset. Because who wants their child to have their greatest fear? I mean, no one does. So I found the patch. I somehow managed to compose myself. I told her straight away, as soon as I got up off the floor and composed myself, what I'd found. I told her there was a patch on her head and that she may have alopecia. It was a horrible day for both of us. We went for the photo shoot. The whole day we were just emotional. We had no idea what was going to happen next. I think I felt like I knew her control had gone. And I think that because of me having it, she instantly jumped straight to the assumption that she was going to go completely bald, because that's what happened to me when I was a child. So straight away, she was at worst case scenario in her mind. And the funny thing is, if I hadn't actually found it that morning, when the photos came back, there was one photo where it stood out and I was like, wow, I was meant to find that patch that day. Mm-hmm. Because if I didn't find it myself physically, I would have seen it in the photos when they came through. So that was pretty crazy. So being that my husband hadn't been through it with a child and his side of the family, it was quite interesting. My side of the family were like, okay, so she's probably got alopecia. We can deal with that. His side were, you need to change her diet. You need to take her to the doctor. You need to go and see what medication there is.
So doing everything that your parents did. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to do something about this. You know, she eats junk food. You need to get her eating healthier. She needs to put weight on. You know, it was like, whoa, calm down. So we took her to see a doctor, and most of that was for my husband to experience it himself, of what it actually meant to hear it from someone else and for my daughter as well. And it went as I thought it would go. Dermatologist confirmed, yes, she has alopecia. you can try this ointment, this cream, these injections. It was like reliving it for myself all over again. But they probably won't do anything, or you can just see what it does and let it be. So we got all the scripts for all the medications and we came home and I said to her, it is up to you. If you want to try treatment, we will try treatment. If you don't want to try it, I'm perfectly fine with that. And I think that decision my husband and his family struggled a little bit with, because she made the decision, I don't want to try anything, Mum. You tried everything. That didn't change anything for you. She has a massive phobia of needles, so there was no way she was going to get any injections. And she said, what are the chances of it growing back if we try this? And I'm like, there's no guarantee. And she's like, well, what's the point? If it's not going to change it, why bother? So I was like, yeah, that makes sense. So we just went along and went, okay, she's got alopecia, let's see what happens. I think about a year later, my son, his hair's a lot shorter because he has short hair. I noticed his hairline had started to recede on one side of his head, and I went, oh, no, surely not. Both of my children are going to have alopecia. But I think her getting it, I didn't have as much of a breakdown as I did with her, as I did with him, because I think part of the breakdown with her was my fear being realised no matter what child it was with. So with him, he got a lot of patches, but he kind of became inactive. So I call it active and inactive when I have it. So when I have hair loss, it's active. When I have hair, it's inactive. So she just had gradual patches that were just slowly increasing. It wasn't rapid. He had all these patches come up, probably about 5, and then it all grew back again. So we're like, okay, maybe it's just going to be a stint for him. Maybe it'll stay. We'll just see what happens. Probably a year went by and neither of them really got worse. He had his hair grow back. She only had a couple of patches. But then in the last 12 months, my daughter started rapidly losing the rest of her hair. And we thought it was rapid until my son started losing his hair again. Mm. And his hair went in like 4 weeks. He went from a full head of hair to a crazy amount of patches within 2 weeks. And then just this weekend, we've done a skin shave with him because he now has less hair than patches. Whereas my daughter, she's still holding on to a little bit of her hair. So they both have drastic hair loss. They both have full-blown alopecia. Apparently it is rare for parents to pass it on their children and for both children to have it. Initially, I felt like I had failed. I felt like it was all my fault. What did I do? It's not fair. I bet you they wish that they weren't my children. They were all my initial thoughts. It's kind of like the grief process. You kind of grieve the loss of your hair. It's like you've lost someone. You lose your hair and you go through the grief. And then you come to these realizations that, hang on a minute, I have them and they have me and they have one another. That's kind of lucky. They have someone to talk to. They have someone to confide in. They have someone that understands and feels what they're going through. And there's actually a lot of alopecian kids out there that don't have that. They are the only one in their family. They don't have siblings or a parent that completely gets them because they have it themselves. Like,
well, that was you.
Yeah, that was me. That was 100% me. I was just on my own, doing my own thing. And my mum did the best she did, and she did an amazing job at that. But for us, we have one another. And we have the ability to make our awareness even stronger now that the three of us have that. I mean, my son choosing to shave his head at the age of 11, that's huge. He just straight away just said, well, if I'm going to lose it, if it's all going to fall out, I'm happy to shave it. Shaving it doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything. That's massive. That reinforced to me the whole reason why I am doing everything I'm doing with social media. Like, if I can have that much impact on my children's life where they're already starting to actually accept that they have alopecia and they're accepting that they will probably look different for their entire life and they're accepting that, well, it doesn't really matter and they can still do everything that everyone else does, that's huge. That is absolutely huge that I'm having that impact on them. The other day I said, I'm glad I have alopecia because I don't know how I would cope with both of my children having it if I didn't have alopecia. And I feel for all those parents out there that go through it and they don't have it themselves. They don't know anyone that has it and their child has it, because the second you find a bald patch and the second you know what alopecia is, your world flips upside down. Because you just envision bullying and attacking and they're going to be pointed at and stared at. And how are they going to do anything? How are they going to be amazing? How are they going to step out of the door of their house when everyone looks at them and goes, what is wrong with you? Do you have cancer? Are you sick? You know, that's all the stuff that instantly goes through your head. How is my child going to survive with this? And the fact that I have it and I've survived with it, it sort of really blows my mind that we have this opportunity now, the three of us have this opportunity to help other people, help other parents, help other kids with alopecia, and that my kids are already on their path to acceptance and already out there. Izzy said she is going to be a motivational speaker.
Oh.
And her goal is to do a TED talk.
Oh.
And that is like, I've succeeded. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because for her to do that at the age of 12 with alopecia, with barely any hair left on her head, to want to do that and to want to be that person, that is just so motivational and inspiring to me to keep pushing and just to keep moving forward and to keep spreading it out there that you don't need hair to be beautiful. You don't need hair to be loved. You don't need hair to succeed. You don't need hair for anything. It's just an accessory that you don't need to have, basically.
Can I ask, when you do go out, I'd imagine, like you're saying, people stare, people make comments. How do you deal with that? And what do you say to your children about how they could deal with that?
It depends on the circumstances. If it's a child, and it's funny, I was literally at the shops on the weekend with Izzy, and this little girl, she might have been 3 or 4, walks past, looks at me, and goes, Mom, and it's the second I hear that inquisitive tone, I'm like, here we go. It's about to happen. Mom, is it okay for ladies to not have hair? And the mum freaked. She looked at me. I wasn't looking at them, but I could feel she looked at me. And she grabbed the child and went, oh, quick, we've got to go over here and do something. So she just diverted. And what I would have loved for her to say is, yeah, it is okay for ladies to not have hair. There's nothing wrong with ladies not having hair, because then that child, the next time they see someone without hair, they're not going to question it because they've been educated. So depending on those circumstances, sometimes I will actually say to the mum, it's okay. I'm not embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed. Yes, you know, to the child, ladies don't have to have hair. Ladies can have shaved head. Sometimes they'll say, Mom, if I've got a baseball cap on, is that a man or a lady? And I can feel their parent just wanting to just click their fingers and disappear in that moment. And because, again, people don't expect ladies to not have hair.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, especially children, they do, they associate men with short hair and women with long hair. So to them it's different. But again, it's an education thing. Then there's the other aspect of it. I know my children don't like to be embarrassed. So if someone does something very inappropriate or says something or points and laughs, if there's an opportunity for me to say something to them without my children getting embarrassed, I will. So it happened at my daughter's gymnastics. These two older-ish girls, she walked past them and I was sitting a little bit further down and I was watching her walk away. And she stepped through the door and they started laughing and saying something. And I, Mama Bear, kind of snapped. And I said to them, "Are you joking?" I said, "Wipe those smiles off your faces." And they just turned around and looked at me and they just went quiet. And I just went, oh, okay, I shouldn't have raised my voice. But I was being protective of her. They were old enough to know better than to laugh at someone for looking different. But, yeah, it's just probably the most common that I get is, how far are you into your treatment? How's your treatment going? And in those circumstances, I will always tell them that I don't have cancer and that I have alopecia, because, A, I would never want someone to think that I have cancer. I would never want someone to think that I'm sick, because I'm not physically sick. And B, clearly they've never come across someone with alopecia. Yep. So it is a moment to say to them, no, I have alopecia, my hair falls out. And you know what a lot of them say? Oh, well, thank God you're not sick then. Oh, well, it's just hair. It doesn't matter. It's like, oh, you have no idea. It is just hair. The lengths you have to go to as a person to accept that it's just hair is a journey and a half, and you have no idea what it's like to get to that point. Sometimes I've even said, okay, shave your head. I want you to go and shave your head right this moment, and you tell me that it's just hair. And they're like, oh. Because at the end of the day, like, their hair's going to grow back and they won't even shave their head. Like, yeah. People just don't realize what they're saying sometimes, and until they're going through it themselves, they never will. Until you experience something yourself or you have someone that you love experience it, I don't think you fully comprehend what it means. But me talking to you and doing the stuff I'm doing on my social media and trying to spread awareness out there, I'm trying to get people to acknowledge what it means and get them to have a little bit more understanding about what we go through.
So with all of this that you're doing and supporting your children as well, what are you most proud of in this whole journey that you've been on?
I think that would be, there's probably two. Myself making the decision to shave. I'm so proud of myself that in that moment I made that decision, because it's had such a fallout in my life in regards to how I've healed and how I now feel about myself. And the second part would be my children doing their gymnastics competitions with their hair loss. My daughter getting up in front of her school in the entire year 7 to 12 at an assembly and telling them what alopecia is. Wow. And what it is for her. The fact that they are owning and on the path to accepting their hair loss, that is my other proudest moment, because partly I think I've had a role to play in that, and I need to acknowledge that, and I need to be proud of myself having that role.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
In demonstrating to them how to go. So I can live the rest of my life happy knowing that my kids are the kind of people that I want them to be and that are going to try and make a change and going to keep moving forward, and they are going to survive and they are going to succeed.
So I've got one final question that I ask everyone at the end of their interviews. If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
This is an emotional one for me. And it's funny how certain questions or certain thoughts bring up so much emotion. But I would love to tell myself that I am worthy, I am beautiful, I can love myself, and I don't need hair to do any of that. And if people don't accept me for having that hair loss and support me, then they don't deserve to be in my life. That's really it.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey and what your kids are going through. And I don't normally get emotional doing this, but I did your one. I will pop your details in the show notes for this episode so that anyone can go and follow you and find out what you're all about, because Kat's social media is amazing. So go check her out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing what you and your kids get up to.
And just remember, the next day you have a bad hair day, it could be worse.
Very true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Kat.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspirational Tales. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could please share it with your family and friends so that we can inspire more people. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review, and make sure that you have subscribed or followed the podcast on whichever platform that you are listening to it on so that you can stay up to date as new episodes are released. Thanks again, and I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Inspirational Tales.